I'm an addict. My name is Jay.
Hello,
Jay.
Hi,
I'd like
Jay.
to this individual I've been going to this individual I've been going to meetings with for a while, and I'm not sure what meeting I met him in, but I know that on a regular basis he comes to a meeting that I do at 7 a.m. on Tuesdays. And it's it started out as a small meeting with a resentment in a coffee pot. Probably, well, it's coming up on 2 years, the meeting's been will be in existence. So it's been 18, 20 months that this meeting has been going on. And it's a great little meeting. And he shows up there on a regular basis, and he's always got something to say about his recovery. He shared his experience, strength, and hope. And I have not had a chance to hear his whole story. And I look very forward when I was told and when he was asked to share at this meeting, because we give people more than 15 or 20 minutes to share their experience, strength, and hope. And without further ado, Ernest, would you share with us?
Thank you, Jay.
Thank you, brother. Though we've never met in person, I feel quite emotional by what you just said. I'm an addict. My name is Ernest.
Hi, Ernest.
Hello, Ernest.
I started saying that when I came back into recovery in 2010. I attended a meeting. And I walked down those stairs. It was like a big ball of barbed wire in my guts. I knew I had to be there. I wasn't crazy about coming back into this fellowship. And when I got asked to share, I did not say I was an addict named Ernie. I did not say I was an addict called Ernie. I said I was an addict named Ernest. And after I said it, I went, what the hell did I just say? For me today, a friend of mine's asking for a password. They're asking for a password for this meeting. Is there a password? I didn't know.
No, there is not. Click on the, no, there is not.
Oh, I'll tell her to go to virtual NA and to look it up here. Give me one second. Virtual, NA.
Real quick, is that Bev?
No, it's Donna from Modesto.
Okay, I don't have her email. Sorry.
H-I-G-N-A speaker. Find it. Anyway. I hope she does, because there's another person I've met online I've known for just about 2 years, and I've asked her to share and really felt her emotional share as well. Anyway, I came back in 2010. Where my recovery, where my life started, I guess, was I was about 4 years old. My dad walked in on my mother making out with his best friend on the couch, and he booted them both out. And a few months later, my mother called up, and being 4 years old, I'd forgotten who she was. And I felt guilty about that. So when she asked me if I wanted to come live with her, my answer was yes. And that just sent my whole life into a massive hurricane. The 7 years I lived with her, I moved 11 times. Never got to build friendships, always over tried to build friendships, and it always seemed to blow up in my face. I was always getting beat up, fighting. Kindergarten became mandatory when I turned 5 years old in the city of Edmonton, Alberta, where I grew up. I got sent to kindergarten. About 2 months later, I got sent home with a letter saying, your child is not a bad child. We're saying that he is too aggressive for us. And until you can calm him down, we don't want him back. So I basically got kicked out of kindergarten at 5 years old. And so my whole life just sort of went like that. It wasn't until I discovered stealing cigarettes and then stealing alcohol that I sort of found some comfort in that. Like, it seemed to calm me down a little bit and just help me be okay with me, because I never knew how to be me. And people would say, just be yourself. I could be the lion tamer at the circus, but I could never be me. I never knew how to just be me. And so you might as well have told me to just blow up in a puff of smoke when you told me that. So, and, you know, every time I was super bad, like, my mother would pawn me off on camps and wherever she could get rid of me. And so what happened was every time I was super bad, she would say, you're going to live with your father, that's it. And I would cry and stuff, and she would change her mind. And one day she just packed up all my stuff and sent me to my dad. And I thought that was a prison sentence. So I made their life a living hell. For that 5 years I lived with them. And at 15 years old, I left their house. My stepmom gave me an alternative. And after getting kicked out of high school, which I found another drug in high school, and that really calmed my hyperactiveness and really helped me think better. And the first test that I wrote being high on this other drug, I got like an 89, and it was the highest mark I've ever achieved in my life. I passed grade 9 with the highest average of 32% and the lowest average of 9%. And the only reason they passed me was to get rid of me. And that was the history of my whole school life. Ernest, we're passing him on to the next grade, even though he doesn't have the marks. We feel he just needs to maximize his potential. I was just a big kid, and they didn't want me in rooms with smaller kids younger than me because they was afraid I was going to beat them up or something, you know. So that's where my whole education went. And when I got that test, I was super freaking excited. I was like, I'd never received a mark like that before in my life. And it was because I was high. It was because it calmed me down to where everything the teacher had said the day before. Okay, this might be on the test. Pay attention to this. It was just like he was just verbatim just saying this stuff. And I was just writing it all out, you know. So what happened was I went home with that test. And I showed my dad. My dad looked at that test and he looked at me and he said, who'd you cheat off of? And it was like, he just took all the air out of my balloon. I said, well, fine, you're never going to see another test again. And it was about a month after that, I got kicked out of that school. I kept going to that school to tell them that I was still going, but I wasn't. I was just sloughing off, and I actually got a job. Eventually that all fell apart, and I ended up back at the feedlot, and my stepmom gave me these three alternatives. A, I could work on the feedlot and pay room and board. B, I could go work for a neighbor and pay room and board and still live at home. Or C, I could just move out. C meant I didn't have to pay any room and board. That was my option. So I left. I was out to collect what the world owed me at 15 years old. And I ended up on the streets of Edmonton. I did whatever I could. I picked things out of garbage cans. I fixed them. I sold them to pawn shops. I even sold myself at times, you know. You know, I did whatever I could to survive. I lived in a youth shelter for runaways. And I would always get to a point in my life, because I didn't know how to make friends, that I would be thinking I'd be asked to leave. I'd be told that I wasn't good enough to stay somewhere. So I would just go to a thrift store, grab some clothes, fill up a bag, and then just disappear. I wouldn't say goodbye to anyone. I wouldn't, I'd just go to a different city, you know, and I'd start my life over, you know. But little did I know that everywhere I went, I took myself with me. Narcotics Anonymous has taught me that. And, you know, in the insanity of this disease, even with 12 years clean, I was working a job I wasn't very happy with anymore. And I was seriously considering doing that again. You know, just, you know, I'm not happy with my home life. I got divorced in 2007 and I remarried within 3 months. Like, what an idiot. You know, and this marriage is pathetic. Everything that I ever did to someone in past relationships, they're doing, I'm experiencing some of that back today. And I'm staying in this relationship so I can learn how my past has affected other people, right? And I wouldn't advise it to anybody else, but, you know, anyway, I, I just have to answer this. She's still looking for this meeting. Anyway, I, you know, I'm in 2010, and I wanted to do things differently, you know, because I'd been in recovery since 1983 was my first meeting, and I, you know, I never worked a program. You know, I did bits and pieces of it. You know, I gained a lot of it through osmosis. And, you know, I never got, you know, I never had what these people had that came in and worked their program. So I wanted to do it the way that they did it, you know. And to me, that's my higher power today. You know, my higher power is Narcotics Anonymous. It's the principles of this program. You know, when I feel like shit and I want to just say F it and run away, you know, I will look up things in the index of the basic text and I will read those things. And that good information that I get from those pages always shuts this dis-ease with people, places, and things that I have in my head because I have the chemical imbalance of addiction, always shuts it down. You know, so I know the spiritual principles of this program are stronger than any thought that my dis-ease has, you know, you know, so as step three says, it's a two-part process. I not only have to turn it over, but I have to do the work. I've been whining and bitching about not liking my job for months, as Jay could probably attest to. And then one day I woke up, I did my morning meditation and I thought, step three is a two-part process. Looking for a job is a two-part process. You have to want to look for a job, but then you have to do the work looking for a job. So, you know, I don't know if any of you remember the show The Flintstones, but I have a tattoo of the Great Gazoo on my shoulder, and that's my NA tattoo. Don't be a dum-dum, right? So I got online and I applied for 5 jobs that one morning. By the time 11 o'clock came, I got 2 callbacks. I had an interview with one job last Wednesday, and he wanted me to start the following Monday. And I said, the responsible thing for me to do is to give 2 weeks at the present employer I'm at. Since I can respect that. And I said, you know, I still like the guy I work for, and I think I should give him 2 weeks. Yesterday, I gave him my 2 weeks, and I got an immediate text back saying, return your office phone. So, that's within his right, you know. So, you know, I'm still going to do the 2 weeks, you know, unless he tells me to leave sooner. And for me, recovery is about growing up. It's about becoming a productive member of society, you know, and that's what these 24 spiritual principles teach me. And I believe there's 24. If somebody believes that there's 136 and that keeps them coming to meetings, rock on with that. Keep coming, you know. And that's what I tell, you know, I used to run around and try to tell people how to work their program because I thought I had a badge, an NAPD. you know, and I was going to cross the country and I was going to go everywhere and tell everybody how to run ANA. Amazing thing happened. Just about every place I went, everybody said the same thing. Sit down and shut the F up, you know? So I ended up relapsing. You know, for me today, it was about, after about 10 years clean, I realized that just because I'm not saying something, somebody's not saying something the same way I'm saying it, doesn't mean it's wrong. If that's what keeps them coming back, let them have it, you know? A very good friend of mine, Mike DiStefano, I can say his name now because he's passed away. He was an ex-heroin addict out of New York City, became cleaned up, became an addictions counselor, and pursued his dream to become a professional comedian. And he went on a TV show and got runner-up and got his own HBO special, you know, and he did this convention. And, you know, he said a lot of the things he wants to say, he's going to share in his act, was things he'd want to say at a convention with a little bit more of a twist, right? If he was ever asked to speak, but no one's ever going to ask him to speak because he's a little bit off the wall. But he said, keep coming back means two things. Keep coming back because I love what you say. And, you know, and I get a lot from you. And keep coming back because I know you're a sick mother. And this is the last place that you have to come. Right. And, you know, when people tell me to keep coming back sometimes, it's because I'm sick. You know, I'm off on a warp, you know, and I need to keep coming back so I can get off that warp, you know. And so I don't ever correct people. I try not to correct people today unless they come and ask me my opinion on my experience, thinking hope how I can help them out in the situation. You know, because the one thing you can't do, and I know this from my experience, of all the people I look back on through the years from 1983 to 2010, all the people that tried to help me and curve me in a way of responsible recovery. And I say responsible recovery is healing mentally, spiritually, and physically. I never listened. I wasn't ready to listen. You know, there's many things that happened in that time that I look back on some of those moments, and they're very impactful for my recovery today. Like back in the late 80s in Edmonton, we had three meetings. One of them was in a minimum security federal prison right in the heart of the city. That was the first meeting I ever went to. And I got to read What is Narcotics Anonymous out of the little white book. And when I read, we don't care your religion, creed, race, we don't care about how much drugs you did, what you did, all we care about is what you want to do about your problem and how we can help, I knew I found the right place. This was no longer a pissing contest, right? And everything included addiction. You know, there wasn't, you know, something wasn't discluded. Everything was included. It was all inclusive. So I knew I found the right place, but I was too scared to ask people how to make it work. You know, I still had that inner insecurity back then about being honest with people and asking them, how do I get better? Show me how to work the steps, right? And so therefore I kept relapsing. And, you know, when I came back this time, I looked at that we of the first 11 steps and I thought, hey, these people did it. I know there's lots of people that came in and got clean and stayed clean. I can stay clean just for today. And I was about to tell this story. In Edmonton years ago, this lady opened up her apartment for a Saturday night meeting, you know, just so we'd have a third meeting. And, we would crowd this apartment. There would be like 15 or 20 of us. We'd be sitting on each other, sitting on the chairs, sitting on the edge of the couch, sitting on the floor. Some people would even be in a bathroom, sitting in the bathroom. You know, they used to laugh that we used to be able to get eight addicts sitting in the bathtub, you know. Anyway, this young couple showed up and they were about as young as I was back then. They were probably about 17, 18 years old. And they showed up, and for the first meeting, and they said they'd be back for the second. The following Saturday, they were back. And the boyfriend had shared that they'd gotten rolled. Somebody held him up with a knife on the way home from the meeting. And he wanted to beat the crap out of this guy. And his girlfriend said, look, we know what he wants the money for. Just give him the money, you know? And so he reluctantly gave this guy the last of their money. And he was mad that following week about this, that, you know, but he knew his girlfriend was right. And a few weeks later, while the meeting was on, this individual walked into the meeting and sat down, squeezed his way between three people sitting on a love seat. And the boyfriend was about to get up, and his girlfriend pulled him back down. So we all figured we knew what was going on. There was a bunch of us just waiting to jump in to split these two up. And even through the prayer, you know, I noticed a lot more eyes were open waiting at the end of the meeting to see what was going to happen. Because I figured this guy was going to swing at this other dude. And after the prayer was over, he let go of his girlfriend's hand. He walked over and he grabbed this guy right by his shoulders. And we were all moving in. And he grabbed this guy and he pulled him in tight. And he said, welcome home. I still get choked up when I tell this. Because the three of them, they stuck together like glue after that. You know, they were like the three amigos. And that's the power of this program. That's the impact that this program can have, you know. And I was in a meeting before COVID. And they had asked someone if they wanted to share for the newcomer. And this girl, she had like 4 days clean or 3 days clean. And this other girl said, I'll share. And she's telling her all these great things she's learning from Narcotics Anonymous, how it's changing her life, and how much it's impacted, and how people are noticing at her home, and her parents are noticing, and her job is noticing how she's different, and how she wants to be on time every day, how she's early every day, and, you know, and all these things are changing in her life. And she said, I've only got 12 days clean. The whole room just started applauding, you know. I mean, here's a person with 12 days clean that was saying some stuff that I was even still working on, you know. And that's when I realized that just because someone may be sharing something that I've already got figured out that they're having trouble with, or that they're saying it wrong, I don't need to go up to them and start telling them how they need to work their program, right? And if they come to me and ask, that's something totally different. Right? And because there are some newcomers that have got things figured out that I'm still working on. So, you know, just as they give me that space, I give them that space. And I learned that after 10 years clean, you know. And, you know, I'm very grateful that Narcotics Anonymous is set up the way it's set up. And there's a lot of things in the service structure I think some people need to be taken out back and given some NA tough love, you know. But that's not my position to do. You know, if I'm upset with the service structure, I need to go in, express my opinion, express my experience, strength, and hope in the situation. And if it gets accepted, it gets accepted. If it doesn't, it doesn't. Let it go. Because I think back how many people tried to express their experience, strength, and hope to me, and I didn't listen. I did whatever I wanted to do, you know. So, you know, I have to give people that same space to grow in the time that they need to grow. You know, sometimes I need to hear things 850,000 times, and then I hear it, and I'm like, holy shit, that's a good idea. I think I'm going to do that. While somebody else is wishing they had a hammer that they could just cluck themselves in the head with, because they've been telling me this for I don't know how long. So, you know, that's how this program works. That's the way I see this program works. You know, and I'm very grateful for the people that are still alive today that were in my life at that time when I wasn't listening. There are some people that are not in my life today that have passed on, you know, because when I came in, one thing I had from the time I came in to the time I came back in was I could never really complete a sentence. I could never really say what I really wanted to say. And there were some people in the program that knew what I wanted to say, you know, and they would clarify for others for me, right? And those people I became very close with. And some of them have passed on, you know, their bodies have said, I've had enough, right? But their spirit still lives on with me, you know. I can still meditate and still hear them telling me stuff. You know, I can still be, you know, and I thought I was maybe going nuts with this, you know, that maybe I was going a little woohoo in the head, you know, and I shared this with people with a long amount of clean time. And they said, Ernest, that's when you're spiritually connected. Oh, that means I'm doing something right. Exactly. Oh, awesome. You know, and you know, I really cherish those people today. You know, my good friend Mike, that was a comedian, he said a lot of things that I impacted in my recovery today. You know, another good friend of mine passed away due to complications of cancer. You know, and I think of him every day. You know, I think of how much I miss being able to go out on, you know, long bike rides with him and travel, you know, and he was one of the guys that actually owned a Harley Davidson that I would ride next to, you know, and, you know, I'm just very grateful that I'm still alive today. I'm very grateful that I'm in all of the times where I thought I wanted to be a carny, I thought I wanted to be a biker, I thought I wanted to be, you know, I thought like just a street idiot, you know, that I never died in any of those situations, because many people did, you know. So I'm very grateful for the things I have today. You know, I was invited by a fellow with lots of clean time to come to this Dinosaurs in Recovery. And him and I have shared a lot of intimate stuff. And I feel very privileged to be able to, somebody with a lot more clean time than I have that says, hey, I want to talk to you about something, you know, and, you know, I feel very privileged to be able to talk to them about stuff like that, you know, and today I can keep my mouth shut, you know, I'm not like, oh, you know, and that's another thing is that I don't like freaking gossip. I don't like politics. You know, when I'm at work and somebody says, oh, you know, so-and-so said this, and I said, what does that got to do with what we're doing today? Shut the frick up, you know? I don't want that shit in my truck. You know, that's no way to live today. You know, and a lot of people respect me for that, and they want to work with me for that, you know? And because, like, if it's not going to affect me directly, it's none of my business, you know? And if somebody's said something about me, that's still none of my business, because that's their conversation. That's them. Now, if they come to me and say, listen, I think you're a real dick, and I think what you did here was wrong, that's a different situation, you know? And if I respect that person, or even if I don't respect that person, if people keep telling me that, then I usually look at it, right? You know, like, I was hiding out in a meeting with a lot of old-timers, and I thought I was just going to be able to sit back and not be of service, because I'm great for taking resentments and coffee pots and starting meetings, and I'm always wanting to be of service. But at this one time in my recovery, I think it was about 5 years clean, I just wanted to join this group with a lot of people with 20 years plus and just sit and just be a part of it. And this guy came up to me one day and he says, you know, Ernest, I have a hard time thinking, like believing that this is your home group, man. And I said, why? He said, because you're the one that goes out and helps struggling groups. Like, I just find it hard to believe that this is your group, man. You know? And I thought, what a dick. Like, I don't need to hear this shit. I deserve to be in this group. And then more people started saying it. And it started to bother me. And I got thinking, okay, this is starting to piss me off. It's something I need to look at. Did this person have merit for saying this? Yeah. Is there groups I can help out? Let's have a look at the meeting list. Yeah, I could help this group out. And so I did. I switched home groups and I joined this other group. And then when COVID came, I was the one that switched it from Blue Jeans back over to Zoom. And, you know, I didn't know how to do that. So I reached out to a girl in my area and I said, hey, Jess, I'm having problems with this. I need some help. She took all my credit card information. She got it all logged on Zoom for me, you know, and, you know, and then I was doing meetings for about 2 years. And my brother from another mother in the U.S. was a member of my group. He called me one day and he said, I'm sorry, I've got another commitment. I can't make the home group tonight. And I'm thinking, oh, shit, who's going to post all my things? Who's going to post all the readings? This guy does it. Like, what the, you know, like, I'm not even at home. You know, I'm walking home from work. It's about an hour and a half walk. How the hell am I going to post all this shit? And I'm starting to have anxiety. And I just thought, wait a minute. I've been whining and bitching about not knowing how to do this for 2 years. I think it's time I sit down and figure it out. You know, I sat down and I figured it out on my phone. And I got everything all lined up. And I went into the meeting and I'd seen if it worked. It worked fine. I did the meeting, you know, and it worked. It was a little slow, you know, but everybody was patient with me. And, you know, I figured this shit out, you know, and then. An individual called me and said, I can't come, you know, and I was at home. And so I figured it out on my laptop. It was, you know, and, you know, I just did it. After 2.5 years of always putting it off, saying it's too hard, I can't do this, I can't do that, you know, I figured it out, you know, and it wasn't that hard. So, you know, for me today, that's what recovery is. And I've said it before, it's about growing up, taking responsibility for myself. And, you know, some days I need to say, hey, stop being a little 5-year-old kid who's crying and screaming that I can't get my own way, and let's be an adult here. Let's try to be productive. Let's try to be responsible, and let's figure this shit out. And if I don't know how, then let's reach out and let's ask somebody, hey, how do I do this? You know, how do you do it? You know, and, you know, I've learned that on jobs today, too. When I go work for someone, they say, do you know how to do this? And I say, well, you know, actually, I know how my last boss wanted it done, but how do you want it done? You know, and I've gained so much respect from employers today by just saying that, you know. And another thing I've learned respect employers from is some days I just don't have the energy to do jobs in the timeline it's supposed to be done in. And so I will make up that time and I work later off the clock, you know, to get the jobs done, you know, because some jobs that I do are time sensitive. And if you don't do it in an amount of time, you don't make the money you should make. And, you know, so, you know, I do that today. And the bosses go, oh, you can't work off the clock. And I say, if I choose to work off the clock, I can work off the clock. That's part of my integrity. That's making my video match my audio. That's what my program teaches me today. Right. But you cannot take time away from me. Right. And I'm not about to say when I leave here for whatever reason, oh, you know, I worked all these hours and I never got paid. No, I chose to work those hours and not get paid because I was making up for not being able to fulfill the commitment I needed to fill at the time. I don't expect anybody else to do that, but that's what I feel I need to do, you know? And, you know, and I believe that's operating with integrity. And I learned integrity after I found humility in step 7, right? I saw that word humility in step 7 and I realized that I'd never really gone that far in all of the time I'd been in recovery before that, right? So for me today, it's about being able to say thank you for when people say good things to me. And it's being able to accept things from people, you know, like I was always great for, you would like to have coffee with, oh, you don't have money? That's fine. I'll get you a coffee, you know? Or, you know, geez, you look very hungry. Would you like to order something? You know, people did that sort of stuff for me in early recovery, you know, and I was very humiliated and very, very shy about it. You know, I felt bad, right? But I didn't feel bad about going into somebody's property and stealing their shit so I could sell it so I could eat. I didn't feel bad about selling myself so I could get high, you know. So why wouldn't I feel bad? Learning humility has taught me how to say thank you and then pay it back, you know. And so that's what I do today. I pay it back. And when I can, this beautiful lady that runs the Easy Does It Friday night meeting. Easy Does It Tuesday is on Virtual NA. That's my home group. And Friday night is the same meeting. You can use the same login. And she runs that meeting. I've known this lady for over 2 years online. Today I get to meet her, you know. And she was asking about billeting. We're not doing any billeting for this convention for some reason. And so I said, don't worry about it. I said, do you have a credit card? She said, no. I said, don't worry about it. I got you covered. I got them a hotel for tonight, you know. And, and because people did that stuff for me, I'm paying it back. My wife said, well, is she going to give you the money for it? I said, what does it matter? Right? I can afford to do it. I'm going to do it. You know, I'm not going to do it for everyone. You know, so, you know, to me, that's what being a productive member of society is. That's what, I mean, Narcotics Anonymous is the last door in the block that we have. If anybody walks into a meeting of Narcotics Anonymous and meets me and then decides not to come back and they're silly enough to give me their phone number, I'm calling them every so often. Hey, I was at the meeting there tonight and I noticed your chair was empty. You know, it was quite sad that your ass wasn't on it. So if you'd like to come back to another meeting, I think your chair would really appreciate it. And I'd love to see you too, you know. And, you know, I do that, you know. And, you know, there's some people in recovery that share that this person kept saying that to them, you know. And another story I'm going to share. I was in recovery for probably 2012, I spoke. I was about 2.5 years clean. I spoke at a convention. And I was probably coming up to about 4 or 5 years clean at the time. And I went to my wife's hometown. And these people are somewhat normal, and they were freaking the shit out of me. So I wanted to go to a meeting. So I drove around this church that said the meeting was at, and I couldn't find it. And then I just said, stop, Ernest. Look for all the freaking cars. Where are all the cars? This is that meeting of Narcotics Anonymous near a church. There's going to be freaking vehicles here. Look. So I opened up my eyes, and I found this bunch of cars next to a house that was next to the church. I walked into the house, door was open, walked right through the kitchen, and there was the meeting of Narcotics Anonymous. I sat down in the corner, thinking nobody was going to see me, and it was a tag meeting right after the girl was finished sharing. She asked me, I didn't have time to calm down, I didn't have time to think about what I was going to say. I talked about how I was reckless in recovery before, and if I'd met a female in recovery, I might as well have walked up and handed her a restraining order, that it's all filled in. When you get sick and tired of me hassling you or stalking you, please take this in and put your name on it and hand it in to the police, you know. And I shared about all kinds of stuff like that, and, you know, because I said I didn't know how to find recovery, and I didn't know how to appreciate fellowship. And when I walked out of it, after I was done sharing, they went for a smoke break. And I was standing outside, and this lady came up to me, and she said, hello, my name is this. And she said, this is my husband. I want you to meet him. And I said, okay. She said, you just said his story word for word. And I said, thank you. And he said, how in the hell did you know to share that? And I said, I didn't. But I said, if you're going to leave your diary open at the coffee shop, I guess anybody can read it. You know, I made that joke and everybody laughed, you know. But, you know, that's what this program is about. It's about coming to meetings. It's about sharing honestly. And somebody's going to say, hey, that's me. you know. And no sooner did we finish hugging and they walked away, this other guy come up, he got within about 2 inches from my nose, and he said, "You're a flipping asshole." And I said, "What did I say?" You know, and he said, "You spoke at my very first NA convention." I said, "Yeah." He said, "You said we have a dis-ease with people, places, and things. That's why we use. Narcotics Anonymous is the only place we can find ease from that dis-ease. Every time I relapse and I'm feeling absolutely miserable, I know I hear that voice in my head that says the only place I'm going to find ease is back in Narcotics Anonymous, and I have to come back." And I said, "Well, that's awesome." I said, "But I'm not taking credit for that. If I said it and it impacted me, it's probably because somebody else said it or I read it in the literature. So keep reading the literature. You'll probably find it, you know." And lo and behold, I was reading my basic text and it's freaking in there, right? So I was like, "Holy shit, I got that from here," you know. So, you know, to me, when I have those moments, it re-impacts why I'm in Narcotics Anonymous, why this program is so important in my life today. You know, of all my step nines I've ever done, there's one person that always made the list. That was my mother. And my sponsor made me write 3 lists. One's amends I'm ready for, amends that'll have to be done in God's time, not my time, and amends I still need some work. My mother's was always on that last set. And one day I was in a meeting, and there was a line we say so much in Narcotics Anonymous. We're not responsible for our disease, but we are responsible for our recovery. And that thought came into my head, my mother is still in her disease. She is not responsible. And it was like the air just went out of the balloon. That resentment was gone. And she died. She was in a hospice with cancer. And she was dying, and my aunts and my cousins were, "Ernest, you got to go see your mom. Ernest, you got to make it right with your mom," right? So I went there, and I visited, and I visited. You know, and she was whining and bitching that all she could get was vanilla ice cream. She wanted strawberry. I went and got her a big fucking bucket of strawberry ice cream. She was in her freaking glory, you know? And she talked about, you know, we talked about things sometimes. And one day I just sat there and watched her sleep for 2 hours. And I thought, good thoughts. You know, and I thought, I hope when she passes on that she finds peace. Because she never had any peace here. You know, she was married to a man for 25 years. And I hope she found peace with that man. I don't know that man. But I hope she found peace in relationship with him. And she passed on. And shockingly, I felt sad. You know, and I'm okay with her being gone. My little sister, I said, you know, mom's sick and she's about to die. My sister said, "I've been waiting for that bitch to die for the last 30 years. She's been saying she's going to die. If she dies now, so what?" You know, my sister still got stuff to work out, but that's my sister's stuff. That's not my stuff. You know, and, you know, if I go 8, 10 months, 12 months, 2 years without talking to her, then that's what happens. But when we talk like it was just yesterday that we had talked, right? And, you know, so today I'm learning how to let people live their lives, you know, in Narcotics Anonymous. That's a beautiful gift Narcotics Anonymous has taught me, you know, and today, you know, I see people on the streets doing things that I did, you know, and sometimes I want to do something about it. So I go out and I buy a whack of little white books, and I write in there where the meetings are, and I hand these little white books out. And then I can be walking down the street the next day, and sometimes I find them, you know, in the bushes or wherever. But somebody has put that little white book in their pocket. Somebody still has it, you know. And if they come to a meeting and they say, "Somebody gave me this book, and that's what brought me here," That's all that matters. It doesn't matter who gave them the book, right? The fact is that they read it and it impacted their life and they saved their life by coming here, you know, because this is the last door in the block for us. And, you know, that's why I love virtual meetings. I love being able to go wherever and meet people and hear the same stories and hear new stories. I believe that my recovery has grown so much by meeting people in this program that I never would have met before. You know, and but that's a gift. You know, that's a gift. You know, a guy back in 1953 decided that this program wasn't cutting it, you know, and he wanted to make something different, and he did, you know, and that is what changed lives for millions of people after that, you know. So, yeah, somebody just poked in the spot they can't poke in. I'm going to have to tell him when he gets out. But anyway, you know, to me, that's a beautiful thing. And having conventions like what we have on here today. In June, I'm going to the Central Alberta Convention. It's a camp out. And I'm going to meet people that I've known online for over 2 years and never met them in person. That's going to be a very emotional experience, you know. But to be able to share that emotion with people today, it's mind-blowing. You know, and that's how I grow, is by experiencing these mind-blowing experiences, these epiphanies. I love using the word epiphany instead of spiritual awakening because I think it makes me sound smarter just by saying epiphany, right? So, you know, today I have some recovery, and the reason I know it is because people tell me, you know, so I know I have to keep moving in this positive direction, right? But my dis-ease does pop in. My dis-ease still tells me that I'm worthless. And why even bother? Just put a rope around your neck and fucking end it. Stop pissing around. You know, that's what my dis-ease wants. But recovery, the people in Narcotics Anonymous, the fellowship, they want me to keep coming back. Because I'm worth it, right? You know? Just hold on 1 second. I got to tell this guy, excuse me. You can't park there. That guy that owns that business comes in and out, and somebody's had to move their car already. Okay? I know it doesn't matter. That guy's in and out like he's threatened to have people towed. Yeah. See, there's another prime example. This addict said, "Oh, I'm only here for half an hour." Doesn't freaking matter. You're not allowed to park there. Don't freaking park there, right? But anyway, you know, today, this gift of recovery is something that I hold very near and dear. And the people that have passed on, they're still a part of my recovery today. You know, and, you know, I still love them as if they're still here. Like the Spanish like to say that people die twice, when the spirit leaves the body. And when the last person they loved speaks their name, you know, and I totally believe in that. You know, to me, that's what life's all about. It's about leaving a memory that people will be glad to say, Ernest, I know you're still here, you know, and, you know, I was abused as a child, and I had something done to me that I could never have kids. I could have had it reversed, and it was a very painful experience, them sticking that scope in me to have a look, and I chickened out. I said, no, if this scope thing hurt this bad, the surgery's probably going to hurt worse. I know women go through 9 months of excruciating pain, and it's like a football coming out of them, and I have the utmost respect for women today because of that. And the fact that when I see a woman in a grocery store with five kids and she's still getting groceries and she has control of that situation, and then I see a dad, kids running all over in a scattered mess. You know, I have so much respect for women today in the program. You know, 90% of the women in the program today, I do not even acknowledge they're there because I am not there to associate with the females in recovery. I'm there to share a message of recovery, right? And the females will look after themselves. The females need to learn to bond with themselves just as I needed to learn to bond with the men. I need to get honest with the men, right? And, you know, sometimes I'll meet somebody on the street and they'll go, oh, hi, Ernest. And I go, hi. And they go, you don't remember me? Nope, sorry, I don't, right? And then they tell me their name and I say, you know, out of respect for you, I've tried not to even acknowledge, you know, who the females are in the meetings, you know, but now that you've introduced yourself to me, you're a sister. You're somebody that I respect. You're somebody that I honor. And, you know, I'm glad that you introduced yourself to me, you know, and I give them a hug like I would hug my sister, right? And, you know, I've got many beautiful relationships with women today, of friendships, of, you know, being able to be honest with them and share emotions, you know, without thinking that I'm going to sleep with them, because I'm not. You know, I'm 56 years old. A lot of the women in the program are young enough to be my granddaughters today. So, you know, I look at it as I'm a freaking pedophile if I even go down that road. So I'm not going down that road, right? I'm going to respect them for the individuals that they are, right? And, you know, and learn to appreciate their recovery for what it is, for where they are in their recovery. You know, and that's a beautiful gift I've learned in Narcotics Anonymous today. I don't need to hand out any more restraining orders, right? I don't need to stalk women anymore. I don't need to act like I was when I was Ernie, when I was the addict called Ernie. I can act like the addict named Ernest today. I can do things as earnestly as possible, you know, and I love the fact that my name is Ernest today, you know, because I can ride that horse all the way to the end of the road, right? And when I sign somebody's card at their birthday, I always make it look like a path. And I say, I'm so privileged to be on the path of recovery with you, right? And, you know, to me, because that's what this is. It's a path of recovery. You know, there's struggles. You know, it's not a nice paved road. There are struggles. There is hard times. And that's when we need to reach, that's when I need to reach out and say, hey, I'm having troubles today, you know? You know, because that's what this is all about. You know, the experience, strength, and hope of someone else is going to save my ass today. And the experience, strength, and hope that I've learned from others is going to save somebody else's ass today. And that's why, even when I was asked to speak today, I said, well, that's on our convention, but that's okay. When I'm asked to share, I'm always excited, you know. And a lot of times I've never written anything down when I've shared. I've always tried to share from the heart. But there was things I've shared today I've never shared before. It's because you people are my family, you know. And someday, you never know, at a world convention, there might be a world convention in Canada someday, and I'll meet some of you, you know, and I'll be tickled freaking pink, right? And that'll be another gift of recovery. So with that, I'm done sharing. I don't know how long I shared for. I've got a feeling I shared too long because my tongue's been sore for the last, I don't know how long. It's usually a sign I talk too long. But, you know, it's a beautiful thing that you're all here. And thank you for asking me to share. And, you know, I love you all. So if you ever think that you don't want to go to a meeting, or you ever think that no one's going to miss you, someone will. So thank you for being a part of my recovery. And thank you. Allow me to be a part of yours.